The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to The Future of Workforce Learning and Development with your host, Pamela Robinson. International organizations, government agencies, and communities are addressing the challenges of developing a highly skilled, productive workforce to support positive economic and social impact. By staying on the cutting edge, you and your business stay ahead. Now, here is your host, Pamela Robinson.
Well, we'd like to welcome our listeners to this week's episode, and we're talking about the first ever American Society of Qualities Global State of Quality Research, and we're looking at the discoveries for 2013. And I'd like to welcome our guest, Stephen Hacker. Hi, Stephen.
Hey, Pamela. How are you today?
Pretty good. Welcome to the show. So glad to have you here. Stephen, you're a fellow chair and also the current chair of ASQ Global and the chair-elect of ASQ. Tell us about your role and a little bit about what ASQ actually does.
Well, this is a professional volunteer organization, so we come together to represent the profession worldwide, the Global Voice of Quality, which is our tag, to represent worldwide the profession of quality and how it plays out both in manufacturing and service and in the world. So a lot of smart people. I'm amazed of the depth of knowledge and understanding my fellow members have, and it's not only an individual membership, there's also numerous enterprise members from civic organizations to government organizations and a lot of for-profit organizations around the world, large ones like Tata and Anheuser-Busch and so forth, that actually join in and have this common interest in quality and how do we move the world ahead through the lens of quality.
Absolutely. You guys have been a huge support throughout my career and also our company for many, many years. One of the interests that we have on the show is to make sure that we're providing evidence-based research with practical application on really just hot topics that are shaping the future of workforce learning and development. And so to focus on the actual research today, Stephen, tell us about, first of all, how does ASQ define quality?
Well, in fact, that actually was one of the first questions in the survey that went out, and we found, I'll tell you, the findings on that, 50% basically say there's no single definition of quality, and 50% say there needs to be one. And I think that the defined term quality is maybe difficult because it may be such a big word, such as maybe love or trust. It has a lot of contextual meaning. But if we step back and say, well, what are the predominant ways people define it? It has to do with the characteristics of goods or services with concern to meet customer expectations. Now, having said that, to meet can be meet or not meet, or all the way to delight or surprise quality, as has been defined. And customer, of course, can be internal, external. It could be in the supply chain. So it's the ability of goods and services, so manufacturing goods or healthcare service or educational services, to meet an expectation by the customer. Now, there's another definition I like that goes along with this very much, too. It's a degree of excellence of something. And I think that says a lot. And that allows for differentiation. It's a degree of excellence of something, in this case, a manufactured good or service.
Oh, I love that. I love that because that does span both manufacturing and service, and whether it's to consumers or B2B, whatever it is.
And actually, it goes, you know, it's such a broad, it can have even talk to terms to the characteristics of a person. To what extent are they a degree of excellence does that individual have?
Ah, that ties right into our topic of focusing on the people side and the processes mm-hmm. as well. So let's do this. Let's create a path from the past to the present to the future. And so, Stephen, what triggered or what was the conversation that triggered the need for this, the first time we've ever done this, as far as looking at global state?
Pamela, there wasn't a baseline of where are we in quality on several big questions. So as we societal now up to that level, move quality to the forefront, especially when we consider things like world problems, the complexity that's facing us, the wicked problem sets that are facing us, such as world food hunger. And if you take a simple fact of food waste being 30-50% in industrialized or non-industrialized countries, it seems to be about the same. There's a great wealth if we can see that supply chain in a quality view in terms of a societal shift of resources. Now, having said that, well, what's the baseline? Where are we? Where is quality? How does it exist in terms of leadership? How does it exist in terms of measurement? Do people measure quality in their manufacturing systems or service systems? And those, what we sought in this first report was simply to provide a baseline globally of the big, what we would call the big Q, the big quality questions.
And then so how many, you started about a year and a half ago, how many companies did you benchmark against globally?
Well, we have over 2,000 already, and the research continues. So over 2,000 respondents from 22 different countries. And so it's pretty broad. And one of the findings we had, and I'll throw out one of the interesting findings, and subsequent research coming out this year actually will do more of a slice of certain aspects of this base research as more data is collected. But the differences in terms of practices across the world are not that much. Pretty much when we talk about tools and techniques and approaches, they tend to be more alike than not. And that may have something to do with the global movement of quality over the last three decades.
Oh, okay, great. Now, as we start to talk about the findings, I want to know a little bit about any surprises that you saw. But what was the overarching question or the purpose for doing this in the first place?
Well, we looked at four different areas, really were the ones that we wanted to investigate. How does quality governance and management differentiate between countries, between manufacturing and service, for instance? Outcomes and measures. To what extent do people use, do organizations use quality, and how do they use quality when they use measurement? And that can differ quite a bit from just finding defects to using as a key strategic planning tool. Competencies and training. So who's training on quality, and is there a difference between large organizations or small organizations or centralized quality managed organizations? And then last is the issue of culture. How does culture, the quality culture, how does that show up in the in different organizations? So what we wanted was a global look across these four themes so that we could provide a baseline so that eventual work in the area of quality, world quality, we could actually see if we had moved the dial. A very quality thing to do, isn't it?
Okay, so that's interesting then. So how did you arrive at the four things? Why these four?
They seem to be the areas of, when you looked at organizations, they seem to be, and of course you know from work on the Baldrige, but you also have the EFQM, the European Quality Award process. There's a number of organizational quality measurements, benchmarking processes out there, and these four themes seem to fit in general in looking at organizations.
Okay, wonderful. That does help set, you know, the baseline, doesn't it?
Yeah, if we were looking at you mentioned about ASQ in terms of and quality in terms of movement as a whole, I would just say that ASQ's been around since 1946. And quality certainly didn't start with ASQ, but if we look at the movement of quality, and I think you have to take that in account with this why now the report, is that if you look at the ethos of personal quality, what we call pursuit of personal excellence, that's been around for some time. I mean, it's been around in the guild system. It's been around with great bricklayers or cathedral builders. The issue about do you have a personal ethos of quality? And then we saw the movement primarily coming out of wartime production and new ways of thinking about mass production. We moved into pursuit of organizational excellence, operational excellence, rather. So how do we make a process really sing, gleam, produce what we want it to produce? And so we come into such topics as Lean of today, Six Sigma of today, TQM of past. And so moving from the individual to operational, and then we move to the area of organizational quality, the pursuit of organizational excellence. And that has really caught on for, let's say, 25 years of investment, 25, 30 years of investment, of how do we move organizations forward, not just manufacturing, again, reaching out to areas of service and even governmental service. How do we create organizational excellence? And this report fits into that, asking who's doing what within organizations. Now, there's a fourth layer, and I won't spend much time, but it has to do with pursuit of quality ideal. And those are emerging concepts such as transformational change, the issue of innovation, sustainability, social responsibility. All those fall in the area of societal, beyond organization.
And that's starting to crop up even now. You're starting to see more and more of those issues of that social consciousness.
Yeah, and all of these are related. They're not, obviously, you can't, I guess you could look at it this, you can't have a high-performance team without high-performance individuals. You can't have a high-performance quality operation, organizational society, unless you have that personal ethos of quality in the majority of members. So these are related, and I think organizations have seen, certainly on the commercial end, they've seen that this issue of social responsibility and sustainability is not something over there, it's something right in their lap, and the need to address that and integrate with it.
Okay, wonderful. I want to spend a little bit more time on that, too, and how it integrates into the report. When we come back from break, let's go into some of the themes that you have, and we'll start out with the quality governance and management to see what actually came out of that, what was the discovery from that particular theme. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
Do you have professionals waiting to get a seat in a required acquisition course? Why not bring DWIA certification courses to your local community? Financial Voyages LLC is partnered with the Department of Defense's Corporate University, Defense Acquisition University, DAU, as a certified equivalent provider offering DWIA certification courses. Call us at 770-379-0950 to discuss the benefits of becoming a local host organization for DWIA certification courses by Financial Voyages LLC. Or go to www.teamfv.com. Today's business marketplace is becoming increasingly global thanks to technologies that didn't even exist a few short years ago. Your business might be a startup or you might be one of the global 500. Either way, you're probably looking at customers and competitors in faraway regions. Listen for Global Reach with host Tay Revez as she brings together experts, ideas, and listeners to help you anywhere in the world. Global Reach is broadcast every Thursday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel. In sales, are you a lion or a vulture? Lions don't wait, they just go for it. Vultures hang around until the lions are finished and just pick up the scraps. How can you set yourself apart as a lion? Join the other aspiring sales lions and listen to Forget Patience, Let's Sell Something with host Ty Maynard. You'll learn the tips and strategies of top sales professionals. You'll gain more clients at a faster rate and at higher margins. If you're a sales professional, business owner, or executive, listen in every Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific on the Voice America Business Channel. When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network. You are tuned in to The Future of Workforce Learning and Development. To reach Pamela Robinson or today's guest, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to fvradio@teamfv.com. Now, back to the future of workforce learning and development.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about the ASQ, Global State of Quality Research, and we're looking at the discoveries for 2013. And we're joined with Stephen Hacker of ASQ, and we were talking about the ethos of quality from individual state of excellence all the way down from operational and moving into sustainability. And what I'd like to do is continue that conversation. And Stephen, let's talk about the themes. Let's go into the first one, which is the quality governance and management. What was that about and what were the results of it?
Well, I think the key question here was really, how do you view quality? And that says a lot about how we manage, an organization would manage or govern the quality aspect. And so if we looked at which statement best matches your view or organization's view of governance and management, the lowest we would say is 4%, seeing it as a risk mitigation activity. In other words, it keeps me out of trouble. 10% would say their primary, they see quality as a tool to fix issues after being discovered. So we had a mess up. Let's now dive into quality and see how we fix it. Compliance activity, 22%. Then 24% is method to manage organizational-wide performance. So now we're getting into the grits of it, of do I actually see that this quality is a way to move my operation, my service system ahead in overall performance. And the last one, the highest one, 37%, continuous improvement activity. In other words, they see it as a forward strategy. It's part of how we move ahead. So if we look at those five different ways of viewing quality, we get a slice of looking at how people see management and governance.
Oh, that's very interesting, because I always focused on the, you know, the continuous improvement part, but knowing that those other pieces were there. Did you see that there was a difference between manufacturing and service?
We did. In this one, and that was one that started to part of the differentiation. I said there was little between countries, for instance, but between those broad segments of service and manufacturing, there seemed to be some differences. And this is where one shows up. About 31% of services versus 19% of manufacturing are likely to see it as a strategic asset and competitive differentiation differentiator. So in other words, services see that having quality as a key strategy, we can outdo the competition, if you would like. About a third say that that fits how we see the world, when only 20% see that from manufacturing.
Okay, so what we want the listeners to understand is that this is the discoveries piece that answers the question of the what. This is how we got to these themes. And then the next step is to start answering those why questions.
Yes. Very good.
And so, and one thing I do want to point out is we'll put this on our website, but this is also free, available to the public. And Stephen, tell them where they can actually download the report.
It's Global State of Quality, one run on phrase, .org. Global State of Quality. org.org. And this was a big choice by the board and ASQ leadership that we would offer to the world free online. So go find out all the nitty-gritty data and trending lines, and I think you can learn quite a bit.
Yeah, definitely pull it down. And as we're going through this episode and highlighting things from the findings, there may be some questions that your company or your organization or you as a professional might also start developing your own why questions and start to advance also the research.
Another item on this governance management was very practical, taking a look at who's using international standards, ISO, as a quality framework. And what we find is that manufacturing organizations about 1.5 times more likely to use ISO as a quality framework. And that was interesting. About 52% of services or service organizations say they use it, while 78% for manufacturing. So,
wow,
again,
that's interesting.
That, the role of ISO. Now, that may be a lot in the, again, in the development of our manufacturing, our global, again, over the last few decades, our global supply chain of having ISO become a tool and approach that we can have some international standards or at least predictability of quality from supplier to supplier.
Exactly. Very interesting. Okay, let's look at the next measure, which is the one that I really targeted and I found interesting was the outcomes and measures was theme two.
Yeah. So outcomes and measures simply is that. So how do you, what do you say about using quality measures, and to what extent do you use them? What do you use? So this starts down maybe on the low point of defects per million, and that of course would sing well with Six Sigma, wouldn't it? And then and then it moves to the first pass yield, which actually is a measure that would say that it's okay. We've checked it once through. It got through the first time. Percentage on time delivery, measures of safety, internal failures, percent compliance, employee satisfaction, and customer satisfactions are among the different measures that were found to be used and to what extent. Again, looking at primarily between manufacturing and services.
What were the differences between the two?
Well, I think the a big one would be maybe not true for fast food, I'm not sure, but percentage on-time delivery. 97% manufacturing say, yeah, this is what we use, versus 58% of services. Other areas such as customer satisfaction, 98% manufacturing, 96% services. So much closer, but percent on time, a difference. And again, first pass yield may be, again, grown out of manufacturing, therefore used more often, 88% manufacturing versus 46%.
Yeah, there's a big difference there. Don't you?
Yes.
Also, measures of safety and internal failures.
Yes. Very close to 100% of manufacturing uses those measures when we find about two-thirds of service organizations use those.
And over the years, we've been focused, you know, quite a bit on measures themselves. How do organizations balance, you know, the right set of measures? Because you don't want to have too many measures. It's, you know.
Yes. Yeah. So what we're looking at, and I think this is exciting. Those people that like myself that like organizational life and excellence are, it's a movement. So the movement of what you measure. So there was a concept of maybe there's a variety of measures that we need to tell about the health of an organization. And then later on we said, and quality needs to be one of those. And then later on we said, well, there's a cascading or connection between all the way to the individual, all the way up to the top of the organization, where there would be some build of measures. So if that's productivity all the way up, if that has to do with quality all the way up, profitability all the way up. So part of it is, where is quality in this mix of measures? And it is in the mix of measure heavily, but it's used differently by organizations. So there's a frequency of reporting quality measures that was also part of this survey. So when you look at senior executives, 26% use it annually.
That's what I was going to ask, is about the frequency, because if you're talking about a senior executive, like you just mentioned, 26% annually, it's different than if you're the one that's reporting this on the front line.
On a daily basis, correct. Where we find frontline staff, 33% are using it, a frontline staff is using it daily.
Yeah, because that becomes their dashboard, doesn't it?
It does. And so now we're back to saying, what are the dashboards? So this, and it's intriguing, and I think this is where additional questions are forthcoming and efforts will be placed. But to what extent are we looking at different time frames, different measures from the top to the bottom? And now we don't. And again, I opened up by saying that the issue of complexity theory, that we are actually becoming more complex in an accelerated change environment, we're now seeing separation and from more and more from top management to frontline employee. And one of the differences can be what dashboard they're using and to how they view quality. And so back all the way back to the governance before this, is it one of pontificating that we need quality, but it's not a central governance theme at the higher C-level C-suites? And that would be a disconnect. It would be that would be odd to have an effective quality organization when we simply talk about it, but we actually don't measure it and use it as a performance criteria.
Exactly. And it would seem to me in that particular gap is where you want to have some level of engagement to see what are the right measures that aren't duplicating themselves, creating rework or something along those lines, and then how are they being used, because we have different stakeholders.
Yes, absolutely. And then you take outside the organization, Pamela, then some organizations aren't even connected to what, and some are very well connected to, what's the customer say? After you've gotten through with all your internal dance, what does the customer say?
Yeah, because if it's not valuable, it's like, okay, you gave me this information, but what's the use of it?
To what degree are you driving the, what is your customer metric you're driving? Is it just satisfaction, or is it now loyalty? So there's been a lot of work been done that has been accomplished in the area of driving loyalty and repeat customers and testimonials. Do they simply grin and bear and there's no alternative to a public utility? So when you do your satisfaction, everyone knows the gig's up. Where else would I go? Or do they delight in your quality? So the issue of measurement outside the organization to the customer is a very dynamic arena. I think that sometimes we grow up in business and people think this is the way it is. It's always been this way. This is all we know, and there's little else happening. It's very dynamic, and that's why I gave the history of quality. It's very dynamic right now, and the measurement is part of that rapid change that's occurring. We're asking big questions now.
You know, that's really interesting, because that kind of goes into of course, the voice of the customer, but also just because the customer is giving you testimonies or they're rating you a certain way, does that really mean that they're loyal to you? So the ultimate version, right, Stephen, is if they're loyal, are they tattooing Harley Davidson on their bodies?
You got it. Yeah, that would be a measure of loyalty that we could actually go out. You know, I tickled because I still find several organizations worldwide, and it just and God bless, it's not a judgment, but it's just I'm amazed that they'll count complaints as the ultimate customer measure. And the reduction of complaints as being one of success, without seeing there's a whole other side to that equation, and that is a generation of testimonials, and I guess you say all the way up to tattooing Nike on a body part or Harley Davidson, yes.
Absolutely. This is a fascinating conversation, and I can see why this particular theme continues throughout the report. When we come back from break, we'll continue the conversation, so stay tuned. We'll be right back.
The business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio, Voice America Business Network.
Do you have professionals waiting to get a seat in a required acquisition course? Why not bring DAWEA certification courses to your local community? Financial Voyages LLC is partnered with the Department of Defense's Corporate University, Defense Acquisition University, DAU, as a certified equivalent provider offering DAWEA certification courses. Call us at 770-379-0950 to discuss the benefits of becoming a local host organization for DAWEA certification courses by Financial Voyages LLC, or go to www.teamfv.com. The way we do banking today continues to evolve. No longer is it just brick and mortar locations or traditional bankers' hours. Today, banking is 24/7. It's in the home. It's on the go. It's digital. Tune in to Breaking Banks with Brett King, for a look at how traditional banking as we know it has changed due to a loss of trust, changing economic conditions and consumer behavior, government involvement, and of course, technology. What does it all mean? Listen every Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, noon Pacific, on the Voice America Business Channel. Did you know that at the root of every business problem lies a communication issue? Communication Nation, a show that brings effective business communication practices to the masses, addresses a number of topics and talking points that impact your professional development, as well as business productivity and profitability. Host Jill Schiffelbein makes the theoretical tangible. Tune in each Tuesday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, 11 a.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel. Be ready to become a better communicator with Communication Nation.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You are tuned in to the future of workforce learning and development. To reach Pamela Robinson or today's guest, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to fvradio@teamfv.com. Now, back to the future of workforce learning and development.
Well, welcome back to this episode, and we've been delving into the discoveries for 2013 for the first ever ASQ Global State of Quality Research. And we've been focusing on the overarching themes that answered the what question about quality, from quality governance and management. And we ended before the break on outcomes and measures. And we have with us our guest is Stephen Hacker from ASQ. Stephen, is there anything else that came out that kind of was really highlighted on the outcomes and measures?
I don't think, again, I would encourage people to go to the globalstateofquality.org and get the report in total. There's tons of things that you can pull out in terms of, I'll give you one last little teaser here. Only about 59% of organizations with this distributed governance of quality as opposed to centralized actually have see quality as a measures as a key function versus 80% of the organizations that manage from a central committee type structure where, in other words, quality is all the way at the top, viewed at the top, viewed and reviewed at the top. We find that there's a different use of using quality measures to drive performance.
Okay, so break that down a little bit further. So those that have an actual centralized committee and that they're putting quality on the radar screen are better users of it.
Show up in performance criteria, and of course that probably goes all the way to individual performance, but certainly unit performance. So that when I say at the top of the organization, I centralized, we're about quality, then when I come down to the subunits, guess what I see? I see that on the control panel, quality. If I don't, and it's kind of like those guys in sales don't use it, those guys in manufacturing do, do whatever you want to, we don't see it showing up as much.
Oh, you know what that my mind automatically goes, then how much cost are you losing? How much profit is seeping through if you don't have that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and so this goes back to the business case for quality. And I would say some people see, ask about, well, what happened? Quality was a 1980s thing, wasn't it? And aren't we done with quality? Well, that's like saying we're done with safety. It's kind of like saying we're done with productivity. You're never done with it, and it is a pillar of a successful organization, be it healthcare, a hospital, a doctor's office, or a manufacturing plant. So when you haven't recognized that, then you might get on the roller coaster, and we know some organizations that get on the roller coaster of quality where they see it as a response to defects or problems, and therefore we have to hustle and put something into place to prevent the catastrophe that we had, or you see it as a normal, pillar of my organization. That I would no more take out quality than I would take out supporting staff with monetarily with a wage. I'd get about the same reaction if I removed quality as if I removed safety. But that's not every organization. That's part of what differentiates good organizations from not so good.
Exactly. And I think it's this, that association with it, but you know it when you see it.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Okay. One of the third pillar that we had, our theme, was competencies and training. How did that show up?
Well, that really is who's doing what training, and along the same line that we just discussed, one of the big findings here is that when you have centralized training, centralized orientation towards the quality function, and it's all up and down the organization, more training happens. If not, training tends to be a little bit more scattered. Then there's certain country differences in this. In fact, for instance, Germany, 77% of organizations provide ISO training, and 82% provide general training and quality and quality management. And so that you would find that as the highest group within the countries that were profiled, the 22 different countries that were profiled in the study.
Exactly. And that's interesting. Actually, we have one of our internal ISO audits going on tomorrow. So so we are definitely excited about that, of continuing to measure internally. For the training itself, you were saying if it was centralized, did you see any differences, again, in the manufacturing and the service side?
Well, for instance, the use of quality metrics to strengthen decision making as a training of quality metrics, manufacturing 48%, service 54%. So that, yes, we do see slight differences in that. Analyze quality, the ability to analyze quality data and trends for potential issues. We see a little split there between manufacturing at 71% and services at 57%. And again, why this is and where are these industries in their maturation are good questions that would come forth from additional studies, additional focus groups. But we do see, again, some differences between manufacturing and services. We also see differences of adaptation of different types of training, such as Six Sigma, Lean, auditing, ISO, quality management. Those are differences. There are some differences there also.
Did you all also look at the method of training? Because we're starting to see that shift a little bit with mobile learning and e-learning, and the fact that organizations are trying to drive their costs down for that training.
Not so much in this report, but again, that may be something else to move ahead with. In terms of delivery packages, that's something that ASQ in our quality body of knowledge, or we call it QBOC, the issue of getting out and connecting with the most efficient, effective way, the highest quality way in teaching quality methods and approaches, that's something that ASQ is very definitely looking at and has an ongoing focus. This is not so much the aspect of this report.
Exactly. And that the reason I bring that up, because it's interesting, because a lot of times when organizations start to go, you know, through the cycles or the responses to the marketplace, a lot of times people will say, well, you know, training is the first thing to go. But it's interesting that it's a key theme as far as global quality is concerned.
Yes. And I would say that in the area of, and this is pretty exciting too, and this is what the net that ASQ has around the world, a lot of it has to do with certification, quality engineers and quality technicians, and the issue of providing standardized training that then can differentiate individuals in the marketplace. And so that when you have a certification program, when you're deeply involved in an external group, in this case ASQ, and helping to establish a criteria, it tends not to fade as quickly, as opposed to this is something my department's doing, and we've launched on Lean. I've seen that in my own work with many organizations, that when it tends to be a champion within the organization that has a great idea and doesn't spread, its lifespan is rather short.
And I'm sure a lot of listeners can kind of associate it with that. It's like the flavor of the month.
It's
Let's do this now.
Safety. I mean, I draw the parallels between safety all the time. And having had a top 50 large organization or Fortune top 50 largest organization type of experience of 18 years, I saw that in the product supply system in manufacturing, is that when it suddenly no longer becomes a roller coaster and it becomes something that we just do, then you move to the top of the heap. And I think quality is struggles with the same stuff.
But I also, having said that, I also think that the companies that are still around today have still sustained that level. And it's not here today, gone tomorrow, but it's still on the radar.
Yes, I would agree with you. And, of course, that's a fascinating subject in itself of longevity of organizations. And there have been a number of studies for organizations, lifespans, and what constitutes a longer lived organization. But I think we could weave into that, into the findings of those studies, the issue of whether it's explicit or not, some level of quality understanding and being able to reproduce quality systems.
Now, you know, all of these themes really are interconnected, and I find that they all are going to land on the fourth theme, and we're going to bring this up when we come back from break, but on culture.
Yes.
And how much transparency that an organization, a company, provides to its customers. How do you differentiate that?
Yes, I think that's a nice, the fourth theme, and I think it's a great theme to wrap up the study.
Okay, wonderful. So we'll be right back. Stay tuned.
We're always talking business.
Talk to an expert.
Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
Dialogue is the single most powerful leadership tool we have to make a difference in the world. Leading Conversations with host Cheryl Esposito creates a place for that dialogue. Tune into the Voice America Business Channel every Friday as Cheryl hosts new conversations among leaders from around the world in business, government, art, economics, and social change. We'll explore big ideas and everyday actions and learn how their own leadership has led them to discover a newfound sense of possibility in the world. Leading Conversations with Cheryl Esposito, bringing big thinkers together in conversations that make a difference, right here on the Voice America Business Channel, every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time.
We spend 70% of our week in the office. What is the difference between enjoying your job and enduring it? The number one motivator is a positive work environment. And that's where Real Recognition Radio comes in. Join your hosts, Roy Saunderson and S. Max Brown, as they take a look at the positive factors of the workplace, such as employee rewards, recognition, incentives, and much more. Tune into Real Recognition Radio, Tuesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific, on the Voice America Business Channel.
Do you have professionals waiting to get a seat in a required acquisition course? Why not bring DAWEA certification courses to your local community? Financial Voyages LLC is partnered with the Department of Defense's Corporate University, Defense Acquisition University, DAU, as a certified equivalent provider offering DAWEA certification courses. Call us at 770-379-0950 to discuss the benefits of becoming a local host organization for DAWEA certification courses by Financial Voyages LLC, or go to www.teamfv.com.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
You are tuned in to The Future of Workforce Learning and Development. To reach Pamela Robinson or today's guest, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to f FVRadio at teamfv.com. Now, back to the future of workforce learning and development.
Well, welcome back. And again, we're looking at the first ever ASQ Global State of Quality Discoveries Report and research that has been recently released. And we've been going through the major themes that are answering the what question, from the quality of governance and management, outcomes and measures, competencies and training. And then where all this lands is in the culture. And so, Stephen, talk a little bit about this. And one thing that we were talking about on break was that organizations that are able to share the information and make the connection with their customers, you can definitely see that because they do create a tribe environment. And one that comes to mind to me is like Apple. So talk a little bit about this particular theme.
Well, I think the transcendence from I'm providing a good service and take it or leave it, and more like it than not, and our businesses, I can measure my business from a profitability or unit sold or whatever, to I'm a partner. And the customer, you know, this isn't a marketing, and I think some people have gotten out in front in marketing and without the proof of the pudding behind them. But when the customer becomes part of the endeavor, part of the enterprise, and that's the customer in terms of this culture theme was front and center. Are organizations creating, like you say, with Apple? The issue of tribal marketing, of course, is not new, but the companies like Nike, like Apple, are you part of the organization and helping the organization to move ahead? Do you identify yourself as a Nike person or Adidas person, or Apple, or PC, or what? Who are you? And it gets pretty deep in the psyche, but this aspect says, to what extent does the organization even view the customer as part of the larger system, as opposed to, shall I say, something, someone or something to dump off on people and go to the next quarter? And it's very interesting. We find that just sharing information on a product or this quality service quality performance. About 41% somewhat agree, 27% agree. In other words, 68%, two-thirds, agree that, yeah, we share our product and service quality performance with our customers. But there's another 10% that say, I don't disagree. Another 12% somewhat disagree, and 9% neutral. So it's not a given across the world that the customer is part of the quality equation.
Now, does it matter by industry, though, I'm wondering, because is transparency an equalizer across all industries? Are there some that are not able to share it with the customer, or is that even the case?
Well, question goes a little bit beyond this study, but that's an excellent question, and that's what part of the study is, to generate areas of questions that then we can do additional. We as ASQ or other organizations, our partner organizations worldwide, partners that help join and do this survey, that we actually, this research, actually that we can further those questions. That's not part of this, though.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, one of the things in this particular theme is, and a good question is, how do you sustain this over time? How do you sustain quality in enterprises?
Well, this is a good question back to the culture. To be able to sustain it, there was a set of questions that went towards what people often pull the handle. Well, we need incentives. We need incentives for quality performance. Well, let's see where the current state is. Not good or bad, but who's doing what? And we find such as informal management recognition, 55% of the organizations see that as what they engage in, versus 30% have some type of financial incentive, 24% have some type of non-financial award, 14% have some type of honorary awards, and all the way down to we do nothing, 12%, and no answer, 12%. So And does that vary? Yeah, we have an industry slant on that in terms of healthcare services, manufacturing, and also size of organizations, from small, under 100 million, to in excess of 10 billion. So size of organization also shows up, and on the study has some showing what the current state is. Now, having said that, and maybe your listeners are familiar with Daniel Pink's work on Drive, the book Drive, and subsequent theories and thinking about incentives as a whole, how much do they really work in total is under question. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that what we found necessarily is the best way. It doesn't even tell us if it's in movement one direction or the other. It simply says what the current state is. So that's why we definitely wanted a baseline. And from this, we may find that the fact that monetary incentives are going out. Again, back to some research that maybe that's not the primary motivator of individuals, that the issue of personal mastery, of having a purpose-filled type of engagement with an organization, those may, and having some level of autonomy, those may be three drivers more than external, here's some cash. And those cash programs or those, whatever the award is, small or large, take a lot of management and in sense, and I would say this from personal work and engagement, and this, and I'm open to other people thinking other things and countering this, but when you do it as outside of the base business and see it as something that you need to reward outside the base business, I think it differentiates it not in a good way, unless it's a full court press to establish it as part of a culture. So there's a difference of offering incentives into establishing a quality, safety, productivity culture versus that's just part of the way we do work.
Exactly. But I think this is really good because, like I said, it lays the foundation, it lays the baseline, and it's recent research that has been released after a year and a half, looking at 30 different countries. And so what you look at all of this and you kind of take it all in, you've downloaded it, you reviewed it, and then you answer the question, okay, now so what? What we get into the implications and the opportunities. So what? Mm-hmm. So what do people do with this in their own world, in their own space, in their own organization?
Well, I think they can measure up and see where they are, first of all, with the world average, and with their industry average, and with the size of organization average. And then I think they go into inquiry. So just as we did with incentives, I think it'd be remiss to say run after it because people are doing it or not doing it. I think it's saying, okay, if I believe in the issue of customers being on culture, customers being an integral part of my business direction, quality feedback system, as opposed of a customer is someone to sell to and keep in the dark and let them experience it, but they're part of the business, say, or part of the service, then what might I do? What might I experiment? Who might I talk to that has a similar view of this? Where are incentives going? What are the best systems? So as I said a couple of times, that these are areas of movement, not necessarily there obviously some bents inside the report of from a quality organization saying these are preferred, but I would, as far from saying this is the way, the right way to move ahead and make it happen, and in fact, not everything in the thing is to make happen.
Exactly.
It's up for the organization. I'll give you another one, the issue of governance. Is it simply a choice between top-down or bottom-up? What are the alternatives? What's happening with the issue of groupings and self-determined subunits within the organization? That's a dynamic area that suddenly we don't have to take just let's have a VP of quality and we'll be okay versus not having one, we're no good. There are alternatives of governance that are happening in organization. That would be a great place to enter into the quality discussion.
Excellent. And that's a good note to start to tie all this together? And as a final word, what are the, very quickly, what are the next steps for this?
Well, as I said, there's two additional, there's some additional pieces coming out. And the additional pieces will as we continue to get data coming in. So we published the report, again, online. As we had the data to this point, there's data that's still rolling in. So additional organizations worldwide, additional countries are participating in this. There'll be two additional reports coming out later this year in the fall that will take a look at the slices of this data. So in the sense of taking a look at, are there certain country, I mentioned Germany as a high training country, are there other interesting pieces that the from the data warehouse that that we create with this that we get?
Okay, great. Stephen, thank you so much for being on the show. And thank you all for listening. This has been a great discussion. And we look forward to seeing you again next week.
Thank you again for listening to The Future of Workforce Learning and Development. Please join your host, Pamela Robinson, again next Thursday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel. Have a great week.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program, brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.